Okay. Wow. Tuesday, September 17th, 2024. The days keep rolling by, and theoretically, a new season is arriving momentarily. In California, we don't really have those traditional four. We're not really sure what we have. Depends what you wake up to each day. So I have been working on doing some audio recordings. I'm gonna give you guys a link to these because I'm about to put out a book called Sought Through Meditation, and it's a exploring the 11th step through the lens of Dharma. And it's got a bunch of guided meditations in the back, and I'm making audio versions of those. So even though the book is not out, there are a bunch of them recorded practices on my website that you are invited to listen to if you care to. And then when the book comes out, you can get the book. Should be in the next week or two. We have pretty much everything. We have the cover figured out. The cover's really nice. Let me see if I can show you the cover. Here I am. Okay, we gotta get Mike. Is that it? Okay, I think I already have this. So what I need to do, I'm sorry if this is a boring way to start a class. Okay, I'll share my screen. This is I took a photo I gave him a photograph. I wanted to say he took, but he didn't take the picture. I gave him a photograph, and he made it look like a painting. Okay, oh, share. Okay, here we go. I just think it's kind of cool looking. That's why I wanted to share. So this was like a photograph of me walking through some trees in Indiana this summer, that Greg Bergman took. Oh, that reminds me, I have to put in a little. I have to put in something in the book about Greg taking the picture. So glad I did this, even if it was not. So there you go. That's the cover. Anyway, this is like a teaser. This is marketing. No, I just want you guys to know about this, of course. So yeah, in the next couple of weeks, we just have to finish the details. It's going to be one of my self-published books, so that the publishers won't steal all my money. All right. So I love publishers. Publishers are great. It's just they're very inefficient. God bless them. Anyway, let's start with some meditation, and you won't have to listen to a recording of me. You'll get to actually hear me. What a thrill for everybody, especially me. Sorry, people. No, September, it's difficult, the beginning of the difficult months of the year. Oh boy, that usually doesn't get bad till November. Anyway, all right. We'll talk on the other side, as they say. So, settling back into your posture. Close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Feel yourself sitting, just arriving in stillness. You might take a moment just to be aware of your own environment. If there are sounds in your environment, feeling the temperature, just the feeling of where you are. When we sit together in in person, then we share a space and this kind of practice. We're each in our own place. Each of us may have a different experience, a different feeling about the space we're in. And just letting the body soften, settling, relaxing. Softening the belly. Releasing any tension. And then connecting with the breath. Feeling the breath either at the nostrils or the belly. So at the nostrils, we're aware of the touch of air coming in and out. At the belly, if that's where we place the attention, then we feel the movement rising and falling. Having a sense of being inside the breath. The movement. The energetic impact of each breath. The life sustaining quality of breathing. Each breath filling us, opening us, emptying, releasing. When the mind intrudes, when the attention wanders, acknowledging that, And bringing the attention back to breathing, back into the body. Each time we return to the breath is a new beginning. We're not trying to go anywhere or get anywhere with mindful breathing. Just to be present with whatever is happening. Be present with the breath, present with thoughts, present with feelings, present with the body. Whatever draws the attention. We make a gentle effort to stay with the breath, but not to create that as a struggle, not to equate the wandering mind with some sort of slip or failing, just the natural movements of mind, of attention. Now that when we don't create our practice as a of competition or striving, becomes much more easeful. If you can bring an underlying attitude of kindness or gentleness to your practice, this isn't a formal loving kindness meditation or repeating of phrases. But more a felt experience of caring, kindness. When we sit with our own mind and body, we come face to face with the challenge of being a human. We see dukkha, unsatisfactory nature, mind and body, the conditioned experience. If we are compassionate people, then naturally we want to meet that discomfort, that agitation, with kindness, with care. The breath itself can have a gentle quality to it. The breath is caring for us, breathing in the oxygen we need, breathing out that which we can't use. Well, a couple things on my mind this morning. I kind of keep my eye out for articles about addiction. I'm sure many of you do the same, you know. There was one in the New York Times. It was in the print edition on Sunday that was interesting on various levels. A lot of it was stuff that, well, not really up my alley, but there was a particular line in it that jumped out. And I don't know if you guys can if you can see this article, because sometimes the paywall gets in the way, but it's called "A Dopamine Fast Will Not Save You from Addiction." So, I'm sure some of you are aware of the like dopamine fast movement, and if you're not, you haven't missed anything. One of these sort of like it seems very sort of hipster-ish to me, but anyway, it's somehow okay. I don't know. Do I want to read any of this to you? Anyway, it's like based on a book called Dopamine Nation by a Stanford psychiatrist. Obviously, a problem already because they're not from Cal. I mean, anyway, sorry, I shouldn't take those biases. This doctor, apparently this is being quoted from the Terry Gross's show. Dr. Lemke explained that the neurotransmitter dopamine is the, quote, common pathway for all pleasurable, intoxicating, rewarding experiences. And then it's unquote. So the more dopamine an experience or substance releases, and the faster it does so, she argues, the more addictive it is. In her book, she says, recovery from addiction requires a radical reset that should often include a dopamine fast, basically avoiding pleasures to help rebalance the brain. So she said, the next sentence I like, Dr. Lemke is far from alone in promoting Puritanism as an addiction cure. Okay, we can see where this author's bias is like not in favor of the dopamine fast. All right, but anyway, the problem with this neuroscience shorthand is that hedonistic excess isn't the cause of addiction, and dopamine's role in the brain is not all about pleasure. Okay, so she says Americans aren't facing an addiction crisis because we get too much dopamine from overabundant cheap thrills. Our problem instead is a lack of connection, community, and purpose, which, again, if you've been follow the conversation in the addiction world, that's one of the arguments. In any case, I'm not, this isn't even what I'm like, all of this like back and forth. It's this, the whole like, well, addiction is caused by this, and we've got, well, we found a drug that will cure you from addiction. I'm like, anyway. So then it goes on with a bunch of the science, which is, if you're into that, it's great. I mean, it's interesting, no doubt. It's not what I was trying to get to here. So late in the article, I now have to find it because I had the, here we go. Dopamine is linked with creating a desire to repeat actions that previously led to pleasure, rather than causing the feeling of pleasure itself. Okay. It's linked with creating a desire to repeat the actions that led to pleasure. To complicate things further, there are also at least two different types of pleasure. And here we go. The experience of desire and anticipation, labeled, and this is in parentheses, labeled wanting by researchers, and the experience of satiation, comfort, and contentment, no parentheses, known as liking. So When I read that, it just kind of jumped off the page. And for those of you who've been with me for a period of time, you may remember a story that I often repeat from Ajahn Sumedho. So Ajahn Sumedho was the first Westerner to ordain as a Buddhist monk with Ajahn Chah, the great Thai forest master. So this was in the late 60s. And early in his monastic career, a group of Thai nuns, young women, came to the monastery to get some teachings from Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah brought Ajahn Chah Sumedho, the young monk, young American monk, to that gathering. And so here's this young man practicing celibacy, being asked to sit for a couple hours with a bunch of young women. And after this teaching, so Ajahn Chah was testing Ajahn Sumedho, seeing if he would trigger lust in him, basically. And seeing how this young American monk would manage this situation. And after the teaching and after the nuns had left, Ajahn Chah turns to Sumedho and says, "Well, how was that, Sumedho?" And Ajahn Sumedho says, "I like, but I don't want." And Ajahn Chah's like, "Ah, very good." Sumedho, that's excellent. And apparently, then, according to Ajahn Amaro, where I heard this story, Ajahn Chah then told that many times over the following weeks, and praised Sumedho, and so the point of it is, in the larger Buddhist teaching, is that in the pathway to suffering, when the Buddha lays out the dependent origination, the way we get from to we get basically the pathway that leads us to suffering, this kind of cycle of samsara, right in the middle of this process, there's the experience of feeling, which involves either liking, disliking, or not caring, that typically triggers wanting. And this is an important link. So you Again, I know many of you have heard me talk about this. Vedana is the liking, disliking, or pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality. And then tanha is the craving. And so according to the Buddha, if we can just be with the pleasant, unpleasant, or liking, not liking, but not move into desire, then we interrupt the path this cycle of samsara, this cycle of craving, this cycle of addiction. And so it's this critical point. So Sumedho was apparently sort of intuitively seeing that line and seeing that, oh, it was pleasant to see these women, but I didn't fall into lust. So I didn't cross that line and continue this cycle of craving. And that's why Ajahn Chah really liked that statement, because it really hits on this critical thing, and it puts it in a slightly different framework. Rather than saying it was pleasant, he said, "Yeah, I like it. So it was pleasant, and I like it, but the liking doesn't turn into craving." Okay, so that's the teaching, right? But here we have this. Now here's where it gets crazy, because here we have. Listen to what this article says. The experience of desire and anticipation, labeled wanting by researchers, and then the experience of satiation, comfort, and contentment, known as liking. So, according to this viewpoint, liking happens after you have the experience. The wanting comes before you have the experience. And so what we see that what Ajahn Sumedho is saying is that we can short circuit this process of falling into wanting by focusing on just the liking. There's already the satiation. So there's a, or, well, I think better words here, comfort, contentment. There's contentment. It's like, oh, I like it. But the wanting we see, and Ajahn Amar often talks about this, the wanting is the, that's the real pull, and it's more powerful than the liking, than the contentment. And it has this feeling that something good is coming, that I'm just about to get this great thing. But when we attune to the experience itself, it's actually a sense of lack. It's a sense of needing something. Whereas the liking, the just being with it, there's no needing. There's contentment. There's comfort. So it really, I mean, when it comes down to what this is saying about our own experience, it's essentially saying, I think, I mean, this is way one way of thinking about it, that we are, in a sense, creating our own sense of need, that it's possible for us. And that's why we need a practice that helps us attune. It's possible for us to discover happiness without getting the stuff. And I mean, that's a basic Buddhist principle, and it's why, when you think of a Buddhist monastic, you don't think of somebody who's unhappy. When you meet Buddhist monks, they are often quite happy. And they're not getting stuff, and they're not involved in getting stuff. That's not how their whole lifestyle is created. Most of us, our lifestyle is very much created about getting stuff, which even down to getting three meals every day. So the monastics deal with that craving around one meal a day. But beyond that, their lifestyle is so simple that there's like not a lot to anticipate, not a lot to fall into wanting, so that they can remember, which is really what, the sati, the mindfulness, is about. Remember that if I don't get into wanting, I'm already okay. Like, it's the wanting that creates the wanting. The wanting is what creates the sense that there's a need. And when I can let go of the thing, that craving, I find that most of the time I'm actually okay the way I am. It's quite striking, and it is really the core teaching of Buddhism that's distinct from the ordinary understanding of life. And it's the second noble truth, that craving causes suffering. And it's the opposite of what we sort of understand instinctually, and certainly culturally, economically. We are encouraged to want. Our whole economic system is, the main driver of the American economy is what? Is consumption. It's and if all the Americans stopped wanting stuff, the economy we'd have to kind of rebuild. And you can conceive that it could function. It would just not be a constantly expanding economy. Anyway, I'm not an economist and I don't want to go there. But the point is that we have this system that's internal and external that feeds us into this samsaric cycle of wanting and then moments of satiation, wanting more, say, another moment of satiation, but it's never satisfied. It's never resolved. And the, you know the, what are the Buddha is offering a different approach, which is don't step onto the cycle. Just don't play that game. Now, again, that's an ideal, not again, but that is an ideal. And as I say, even monastics who are living this life committed to that ideal, nonetheless, if you hear them talk about their lives, you see that they have wanting. They're not superhuman. So it's not helpful for us to take this as a model and then compare ourselves or as the dopamine fast might suggest, oh, just like don't, you know, cut out all pleasure. Like that's not really the solution either. If because that's what is that? That's just the other, you know, it's not the middle way, right? That's the way of asceticism. That's the way that the Buddha rejected as well. And this is, of course, what makes being a Dharma practitioner so challenging, because there isn't a black and white thing. There isn't a dopamine fast that solves it, or a, you know, indulgent in pleasure way of living that solves dukkha, you know. It's built in as a challenge. And so to me, you know, maybe if we're going to use the language of recovery, say that what we aim for is harm reduction, you know, dukkha reduction. You know, how can I reduce dukkha? How can I not make my life be completely consumed with pursuing pleasure or completely consumed with eliminating all grasping, you know, and that's our challenge, moment by moment, day by day, and it's what mindfulness invites us to explore. I mean, literally, I mean, that is what our mindfulness practice is really meant to do, is to help us see moment by moment how we are either falling into or not falling into the cycle of craving. And, you know, so it invites us to explore that. And then the Eightfold Path and the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha support us in that, so that we have precepts, which are basically, okay, we need boundaries. You know, so that's that there is a certain black and white, that there are certain things we don't do. There's boundaries. In recovery, we have those boundaries as well. And then there's right view, which is like we understand how things work. There's right intention. We try to work in accord with that. And so, and we have, you know, right mindfulness, right effort, right concentration. We have this Eightfold Path that supports us in doing this. But it's not a, you know, a path like, okay, there it is, just go straight there. You know, it's this, you know, it's this movement, always trying to find balance and find a middle way that you know, is manageable, is good, is wholesome, but not striving for perfection, because that just turns out to be another way to create suffering. Well, thank goodness. I had something else I was going to draw on this morning, but that was enough of a rant. So there we go. Kids. I don't know why I'm calling you kids. None of you are kids. It's just, no. So I hope people are well this morning. I did want to, there was something else I wanted to mention. It'll come back to me. But I will mention that if you are interested in attending the Buddhist Recovery Network conference, that is coming up October 10th to the 13th. You can get information on the Buddhist Recovery Network website. Maybe Monica can slip that into the chat. Oh, I know what I wanted to mention. For those who weren't with me last Friday for the Spirit Rock webs class, I actually gave a good talk, which is, unusual. I mean that it was not that. Well, what was unusual was that I actually gave a really like I wrote a talk, which I almost never do. And yeah, they have it up already. So here's the Kevin Griffin page on Dharma Seed, which is where all the Spirit Rock talks go. And I happen to be teacher 100 on Dharma Seed, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, it'd be cooler if I were 108, I guess, according to Buddhists. Anyway, the top there, these are listed chronologically, so the newest one is at the top. It's just called Living Kindness, but it's different from my book. It's not really the Living Kindness book. It's really about feeling loving kindness in your meditation practice. I can see that my recent talks, several of them have been on similar lines. Anyway, if you're interested, there's that. So I'm giving all this content today. There you go. So we have some time left. If there's any comments or questions, anybody wants to join in this morning, share. If anybody's struggling and they want to share, you're welcome to do that in this place as well. So happy to hear from anyone. One other thing, I am going to be live in Walnut Creek this Friday night. So I wonder if it's on my website. I actually don't remember ever putting it onto my website. I'll take a look. I sort of don't think so. No, it's not there. Terrible. There's something called Indigo Yoga in Walnut Creek, and they are hosting me on Friday night. So you can probably find that pretty easily. So still no volunteers here, huh? Okay. Well, I can wait. I don't know what that means, Holly. Want what you have came to mind. I think you typoed something.
No, it just means want what you have.
Oh, what you have. I see. Right, right, right. Quote,
Yeah,
want what you have. Right.
it lives on my bathroom mirror.
Yeah, and I think Sheryl Crow had that song. It's not wanting, it's not, anyway, can't think of it. Anyway, she says, it's wanting what you've got. Not having what you want, it's wanting what you've got.
Rita has her hand up.
Look at that, it's International Bhikkhuni Day. That's right, thank you. Rita, hi, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
With regard to wanting, what
Yes.
about our addiction, where the physical component it comes into play? Can we still override that physical compulsion with short-circuiting the wanting? If
Oof.
you're in addiction and you are trying to practice this, could it work?
Sorry, you're saying
And
like
you
could
will
you
have to detoxify first.
Oh. I mean, I'm not a, strictly speaking, an addiction professional. So it's sort of a technical question. My tendency is to not attribute some kind of magical powers to meditation or mindfulness. If you're if you're addicted to heroin, yeah, I mean, you're going to need to detox. But in order to detox at all, there has to be that intention. You're already applying some restraint, right? Which is kind of what we're talking about here. I mean, it is in simple terms. Liking but not wanting is a form of restraint. So, I mean, I'm not exactly answering the question, but because it's I wouldn't want to make a definitive claim about it. I don't again I you know I think we have to I mean I honor that there is a medical side to certain forms of addiction, and I don't want to imagine that I can just meditate my way around that, if that's kind of what you're asking.
Because, like in the big book, it says that in of Alcoholics Anonymous, it alludes to the fact that we're powerless over the physical craving or whatever it is of alcohol.
Yeah.
But in order to implement a strategy like this, where we can override, we would have to override over end that physical craving first. I'm thinking, I'm not quite sure, to be able to use this. Not wanting.
Yeah, well, I do think, yeah, I do think that, you need the whole spectrum of recovery tools. That's why, I mean, to me, the community and the meetings are r really a vital part of the beginning of the process, because trying to internally manage and just purely internally manage addictive craving isn't really, as this first step says, it's unmanageable. It's not something we can personally do. And so that's why the steps are written the way they are. It's sort of acknowledging that to initially overcome those cravings, the habits, because it's a whole, it's part of our whole life and our identity. We need something more. And so, it points to higher power. That can take many forms, but certainly to me, the program and the meetings and the community and the people are one of the most important parts of that initially. Yeah, so I think that a typical person who is just trying to get off alcohol or drugs doesn't have the subtlety of awareness. They can, the to attune to this distinction between liking and wanting. When we're intoxicated, we're not. Our senses are too dulled to really, and even in withdrawal or in the early stages, when you've been living that way, you don't have that subtlety of awareness to pick it up. So I think it requires a more, a further step in recovery before it would really be very functional. But I'm not going to say it couldn't be done. I just don't. I just wouldn't. I don't want to, again, sort of take a stance of like, just do this, and then
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing up the question. So, Monica, are you saying that
Oh, they're
the
having some problems. I can get to your schedule on Indigo's
Oh,
Soul
in
Yoga.
Indigo. Okay, not Buddhist Recovery Network.
No, I got that up. That's fine. Sorry, y'all. I think you'll have to search yourselves. They're having some issues. I can get to it sometimes, but not always. And you'll have to create an account, it looks like, to
Oh,
sign up.
really?
Yeah, so
All
that's
right.
fine.
I'll try to, I'm trying to find it, the information myself.
It's Locust Grove.
Okay. They
Let me
invited
see.
me.
Oh, what is that?
Okay, this says Friday nights from 7 to 8:30. And
I don't know
it's
if I could probably screenshot it, but it's going to take me a minute to get it up, so.
Well, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, it's Indigo Yoga in Walnut Creek. Anybody can, I'm sure, find that. So 7 to 8:30. And John Atishu, who's asking that question, is quite competent to find it, I know.
I'm sure,
He says he'll
yes.
be there. Look at that. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. And
Ah,
don't come late,
Tippy.
and don't come in late after the meditation like you like to do. So and getting to know people too well is dangerous.
Our representative, our delegate.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, John.
Any other comments or questions this morning? I know it's where we've reached 11 and people are starting to drop off, but I've got the day to myself here, and do wonderful things like prehab and office cleaning, and might record some. So anyway, I've got time if anybody wants to chime in here. Diane, are you saying goodbye? Are you okay? Bye, goodbye. All right, well, if you guys are going to be so quiet, I mean, this is
I'm at a complete loss for words, but I finished my other course, so now I can hang on and stay late, and no one has anything to say,
I know.
including you,
Well, what
which
about
is great.
you? Come on.
I just keep thinking about what the hell the Buddha would be thinking right now in this, in the condition of the world. That's bad enough.
I'm pretty sure he'd be like, same as it ever was, I mean, really, I love some of the stories, like stuff that happened. I told this story recently. King Bimbisara, right? Friend of the Buddha, follower of the Buddha. His son, Ajatasattu, was like, Dad, you're getting old. Like, why don't you let me be king? Bimbisara's like, I'm down with that. This wasn't quite the language he used. He was speaking some other language. But anyway, it's like, yeah, I'm going to retire. I'll just meditate, hang out with the Buddha. So Ajatasattu abdicates, gives the throne to, I mean, Bimbisara abdicates, gives the throne to his son, Ajatasattu. Then Devadatta, who was the Buddha's evil cousin, who was a monk, is whispering in Ajatasattu's ear, yeah, but your father's going to come back. He's going to try to take the throne back from you. Ajatasattu's like, you're right. He puts his father in jail. His father, who just like let him become the king. Like, now are you putting him in jail? Ajatasattu's, yeah, but like he might get out of jail and like it, and then you're really going to be in trouble. But you got to get rid of him. So Ajatasattu has his father executed. He kills his own father, who was the king, right? Regicide. I mean, that's bad. That was like, and these people knew the Buddha, you know, and Ajatasattu was sort of a follower of the Buddha. And there's a famous sutta where he goes and he listens to a talk from the Buddha. And he listens to the talk. He's like, "That was a great talk. Thank you so much." And the Buddha's like, "Yeah, good." Ajatasattu leaves. And he then said, he said, the Buddha turns to his followers who are there. He says, "You know, Ajatasattu would have actually had the breakthrough. He would have become enlightened while I gave that talk. He was ready. But because of the karma of having murdered his father, he's going to go to the hell realms, you know." So it's good to know, like, there's some karmic consequence for these things. And, you know, according to that, if you believe in that, which I don't believe and I don't not believe, I just tell you what they said. You know, we can assume that justice will be done for all those involved. But yeah, I mean, it's just, this is what the Buddha talked about. It's why, you know, the greed, hatred, and delusion report, right? It just, this is what runs people. And, you know, there are cycles, certainly, where things get worse, no doubt. But, you know, I just don't think we can be, it's like, you know, you're shocked, but you're not surprised, you know, kind of, I think is the way it strikes me. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that's what people do. I mean, that's how I console myself, you know, by putting it in this larger framework, a more historical framework. But it's hard to, you know, live through, you know, historical moments like this. There's no doubt. It's really hard. But I think it's incumbent on us, and we, you know, we have these teachings. It's incumbent on us to not get swallowed whole by it, you know, to find ways to take care of ourselves, to find ways to hold this in our hearts and in our minds, that we don't allow it, like, you know, allow it to, you know, overtake us to the point where we're consumed with fear or anger. I mean, I admit that just like anybody else, I'm fascinated by this and I follow it very closely, you know, and we know, like, that even the horrible thing is that, you know, there's an entertainment in this, and that, you know, he shall not be named thrives on the fact that we're all entertained by his madness. And, you know, and that's kind of gross. But I don't know, I'm able to protect my heart from it. I know my wife isn't. Like, literally last night we were watching, you know, a news program, we can call it that. And I just paused it and I said, you shouldn't listen to this. And she was like, yeah, you're right, I know. And she go take your bath, you know. And then she went upstairs and I continued watching, because I'm able to hold it, you know, in a way that I see it on her face, like she's getting swamped. And so, you know, we each have to find our tolerance level and take care of ourselves. I think what's important is that we do our part, whatever it is, to not allow this to reach, you know, its desired end, and to interrupt its the destructive energies that are there. So
Not to get off too far in the weeds, but I was sort of accused that I wasn't talking publicly about my beliefs because look what happened when in Germany during, you know, people didn't speak out. And I was like, no, I'm trying to protect my heart, you know, and I'm not uneducated and I'm not going to get into verbal battles with anyone either. Is that a cop out or is it, I mean, I don't need,
No,
I
I
am
don't
asking
think
to be the
so.
moral police here, but yeah.
The thing is that there's no comparison between the Weimar Republic and the United
I
States
didn't
of
think
America,
so either, but yeah.
because that was a very weak and new, fragile system that had no history, that had it was ripe for toppling. We have a pretty strong system. It certainly could be toppled. We can see that it's close to that. But I mean, I'm voting with my money right now. I'll tell you that.
I
I've
am
been
too.
sinking money into the
Yes,
campaign
us
as to the
too.
best
Us too.
ability. And but yeah, I mean, if somebody, I mean, it's a difficult question, it's like when the Muslim ban went into place, and people were out in the streets, and people were at the airport in San Francisco. I remember them going to the airport to stand up against that. And I'm not sh I don't remember exactly what it was about that. But I think when there are blatant acts of, authoritarian acts, then that's when we have to put our bodies on the line in some way or another. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, it's not like, oh, I'm going to fly to Springfield, Ohio, and stand in front of a Haitian's door. But thankfully, I mean, and again, I do feel like our system holds, because the governor of the state is going no and sending in police to protect. So we're not in a situation where the system itself is actually turning against, I mean, in the larger sense, I mean, as flawed as it is, because we continue to have systemic
And
racism and
this
many
is why
other
it's so important for us
failings.
to have community like what we have right here. This is what's so important that we stick together as a sangha. We have to
Yeah.
support each other. These are very stressful times. Things that seem to have a way of repeating themselves in history.
Yeah.
Been going on for thousands and thousands of years. But
Yeah.
we have each other, but we have to do our part. So
Yeah.
anyway, I'm just glad to be able to hang out now with you again, and my other course is over, and I'll come up with a question for next week. I'll think about it.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah,
Thanks,
and
Steve.
then Kevin, remember I'm not here next week, so
Oh. Oh no. All right.
Angela thought she could maybe help you, but
I can manage, of course,
all
I
right,
think
well, just a reminder.
we'll be
Yeah,
fine. I know.
okay.
I'll still be surprised. I'll be like, "Where's Monica today?" And somebody will be like, "Remember, she said she was
Okay,
going
you're all my witness. I'm away
to." All right.
on the
Then
occasion of spreading my mother's ashes in New Mexico
okay, well.
for her wishes. So
All
yeah.
right. Where are you spreading them?
Don't know yet.
Oh.
I'm not in charge, so
You don't know what her wishes were?
she said somewhere with a breeze and a
Okay.
view. And where it's
Oh,
allowed, I have two. Yeah, the whole family's going, so the circus is coming to town. So the others want to be in charge, and I'm like, yep, yeah, okay, it's okay. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm the one who advocates for simplicity in there. It'll get to
Right.
it'll you know what you can imagine, well
I
imagine what.
can well imagine. I've heard about families. All right, my friends. Be well as
Okay.
we transition into the autumn. Take care, and I'll see you next time.
Blessings.
Thanks.